debe girar. Mira, estoy perdida, enloquecida, de tanto buscar y no encontrar respuestas, salidas, alguna señal en mi camino. ¿Cuál es la solución? Disolución, ilusión de un sueño que nunca llegará.
Resistencia, no dejen de gritar.
Resistencia, Los de Abajo, and that about does it for this week's Radio Free Chico. You want to stay tuned for Peace and Social Justice with Corey. I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
What's good, people? Welcome to another episode of the Peace and Social Justice Show here on 90.1 KZFR. I'm Hemp C, reporting from occupied Machupa territory, settlers call Chico, California. I'll be your host for the next 90 minutes or so. Today, I'm excited to bring you some voices from some very different yet overlapping backgrounds, revealing the beauty and the multiplicity of sapient experiences. With it being June, I wanted to celebrate Juneteenth. Juneteenth is a celebratory observation of the true emancipation of black folks from chattel slavery in United States of America, which happened to take place years after Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation went into effect in 1863 and months before the 13th Amendment was ratified in 1865. It's said that on the 18th of June, 1865, the Union arrived in Galveston, Texas, and the next day, June 19th, a general announced that the slaves in Texas were free by order of the President of the United States. And that has been a date that has been celebrated in black communities, particularly for longer than any other holiday having to do with slavery. As I was editing this, or in reverence of these events, I felt compelled and called to attempt to produce an opportunity for learning about race in the most intimate and powerful manner I know of, which is listening to people from diverse backgrounds. As I was editing this episode, it was like creating a collage of diverse voices speaking not in unison, but in a dynamic harmony of individual truths geared towards community. We start the show with the sapient session on the corner of Main and 3rd here in downtown Chico, where protesters gathered waving flags and signs, chanting in solidarity with Palestinians last weekend. As the traffic was filled with mostly supportive honks and other gestures of agreement, there were a few negative expressions sprinkled in, but the solidarity and love far outweighed any negativity I was able to witness. As I stood in the mix, taking in the scene, it was almost like being teleported elsewhere. It truly didn't feel like I was in Chico anymore, as the buzz in the air of blaring horns and relentless chants washed over me. I saw one protester passionately chanting, holding a sign over their head, arms outstretched, presenting a large white sheet of cardboard that read, "No to anti-Semitism, no to Islamophobia, no to hate." And they also had a kafaya, an Arabic scarf draped on their shoulder. And I already felt called to capture a voice from that event. And this seemed like a perfect candidate, as they were in the center of the experience in more ways than I even knew. What came next was a powerful exchange just outside the eye of last week's protests. And for anonymity purposes, The protester named themselves Little Palestine, and Little Palestine was gracious in sharing their story and honest thoughts on the conflict, the protests, the weight of feeling responsible to represent a race and ethnicity in a positive light with all they do, effects of racism and solidarity, and much more. From there, we get into being black in Butte, as I make a Zoom call out to Florida to speak with a local black father, basketball coach, mentor, and gospel hip-hop artist, Marshawn Jones. Jones, who was back east attending a football tournament for his youngest son, was kind enough to make time and share his experiences as a black man coming from Inglewood, California to Chico. We get into how he found Chico and how his thoughts matured on the environment of Chico, perception versus reality of growing up in the ghetto, and different forms of community, all in attempts of dismantling myths around black men. It was a very entertaining honor to talk with Marshawn, and I hope you all are able to gain sapience from that session. Next, I make a pit stop by Bethel AME to chat with a black certified life coach, grant writer, serial administrator, and devout server of God and community, Rachel Cowan, who stopped by to tell me about the three-day, three-event Juneteenth celebration as I headed to the park to meet with the black writer, organizer, and founder of Alma Culture, Education and Arts, Anicia Johnson Smith. Anicia, the daughter of Dorothy Johnson, whom the Chapman Center was named for, sat with me in a piece of shade in Lower Park, and we discussed what it was like for her growing up black in Chico, being one of three blacks out of a 500 graduation class and only the only woman. We speak on the different definitions of racism, the African diaspora, and much more. But first, we start the show with myself, Hemp C, having a sapient session with Little Palestine during the Free Palestine protest of last week. I thank you all for tuning in and hope you gain sapience from these sessions.
So, I usually start these interviews by saying, who am I speaking with? But with that being a sensitive subject, with this being around protesting for the around the occupation of Palestine, and you being of that ethnicity, I appreciate you spending your time with us. And how would you like to be referred to for this communication?
Lil Palestine.
Lil Palestine? I like it. I like it. So why are you here? Why are you all here on the corner here today?
Well, not only am I a daughter of Palestinian immigrants, I am... Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry.
I don't expect anything, so...
I'm terrible at this already. So I basically, not only being the daughter of Palestinian immigrants, I am a Palestinian citizen. Even though I was born in this country, I have dual citizenship through, you know, my family being from there. So I am a Palestinian whose families do go through Israeli harassment and deal with the occupation and the little, sorry, you know, deal with everyday struggles in Palestine and the occupation and all that.
What do you think is most important for people to know about this?
I think the main thing that people need to know about this, it's not just a Palestinian issue, it's a human rights issue. When the Palestinian people struggle, when these indigenous people of that country struggle, then the world should be struggling as well. Because I feel like as citizens of the world, we have failed, not only the Native Americans in this country, in Canada, and places around the world. There's a few places like Palestine where they're the last few remaining people and who are currently being ethnically, like, wiped out, like, in front of our eyes. And we always look back at, like, at history and we're like, oh, back then, like, if we knew or if we had the resources or if we had the time and all that, then we could have done something about it. But it's happening right now, like, in front of our eyes. And now because of social media, this blew up. This has been happening for a minute. This is always a constant struggle, a constant problem going on. But thank God for social media, people are seeing the horrors that Palestinian people are going through. Mm-hmm. And so this is a good time to capture and see, which side of history are you going to be on?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Yeah.
So when you see others gathering around this, how does that make you feel? Or is there anything?
It makes me feel a little better about being Palestinian because growing up, especially in this country and people not knowing anything about it, it feels like my voice is unheard. And like the thing is, my voice is speaking for other Palestinians in Palestine. So Palestine in general is being unheard. So it just feels like we're being heard. Mm. And being heard is important, but now it's yes. like, what will people do to combat this whole thing? Okay, they're hearing us, but what are they going to do about it?
Great points, great points. And, you know, I don't expect you to have all the answers and to do all the labor, and I appreciate you spending this time and sharing this grief with us, basically. So that's, like you were saying, showing up and hearing is great, and listening, I think, is very important. Listen to people like yourself who have that lived experience. And then what? So I would like to ask you.
I slightly love the experience. Sorry to interrupt.
Please do.
Little quick story. Last time I was in Palestine, which was like almost 2 years ago.
Okay.
I had a gun pointed at me. Mm. A group of Palestinians. Mm-hmm. I caught this random taxi cab with a bunch of Palestinians. Like, you think stranger danger, don't get into a taxi cab filled with like random people. But that's, Palestinians got each other's backs.
Different
that's
culture.
How it is. Like, the
different
solidarity
culture.
Is strong.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless if you don't know each other, they like are always protective of each other. And especially, it was obvious I was not from the country. Like, I was Palestinian, but like, you know, I don't know how things work. You know, I'm not like native. Like, I don't live and go through what they go through. And so we were from the village that my family's from.
Mm-hmm.
It's up in the mountains, so like we had to like drive to like the central city that everyone goes. So I'm not gonna name what city it is.
Sure.
But it's really well known if I, let's say, point it out.
Sure.
And so to get there, it was a checkpoint. Technically, it was an Israeli checkpoint.
Mm.
And they were holding it off, and they put spikes in the middle of the street. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they were stopping it, but a bunch of soldiers were just like kind of taunting us, and then they ended up pointing a gun at us, and like I started freaking out because obviously like I was raised here. I you know, I'm obviously, I've never been through anything like that. I know my mom told me countless stories of like guns being pointed at AK-47. Like, it's a normal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fighting back against Israeli resistance. But I was just like, that was when I truly felt Palestinian, and I was like, okay. Mm. And that's just one of the moments I felt.
Sure.
You know, it was just like, I don't want to get into
can
it.
Can I ask you,
yeah.
When was the first time you realized maybe of your ethnicity?
I realized at young age, growing up, my mom would explain the conflict and how people would look at us. And so my mom telling me growing up, especially in this little community, she'd be like, little Palestine, basically you represent not only Palestine, but your religion as well.
Mm.
And so everything you do and say represents you and our family and our country. So you can never slip up. You can never, you can never mess up. You gotta be perfect.
Heavy.
And it's just been a stressor since now. But I feel like, and that's why I think black people and Palestinians' main thing is that, like, our solidarity, why we hold each other up, and, like, in our movement, basically is because in this country, you guys are, like, you can't mess up. You don't have the privileges like other people here. And, I mean, obviously, me, I look I look a bit Palestinian, but I can pass off as a white person.
Sure.
But you, your skin color shows who you are. And you deal, obviously, with much more than I do, and I ever will. And I have, in this town, have experienced interactions where, after they find out my ethnicity or who I am, a different reaction.
Can you speak to that?
I don't really know how.
I hear you. I hear you.
That's the thing. I really don't know how. It's just like, I'm a human being. We all are.
Yeah.
We are all made from the same thing. I mean, I don't know if y'all are religious or not, but, like, we come from one, Adam and Eve. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And you believe in God? God created us all. We're literally, like, in our holy book, we are made from all the same sands, like, that have been scattered around the world. I'm not going to get into it. But, like, we are all one. We are all one. Just different, unique, like snowflakes.
Great points, beautiful points. I appreciate the energy. And let's see. Yeah, this has just been a spontaneous thing. I saw you there, and Spirit moved me to ask you a couple questions. And this has been very stimulating, for lack of a better term. But it's an opening of the mind of just, you know, because you think Chico protests Palestine, and the last thing you expect to see is an actual Palestinian out here who was raised in Chico, and so that was a surprise for me.
There are several. I'm just going to let you know here. Mm-hmm. It's not very common, but there are a couple. And you know what? I would suggest anybody listening to this, if they do, talk to a Palestinian. You can never know the side of a story unless it's from the one being oppressed.
The magic spirit, yeah. I'm not necessarily religious, but I'm very spiritual. You know?
Religion is spirit.
Indeed.
You know what I mean? Like, indeed. It's the same thing in my eyes. It's spiritual, religious, same thing. But continue, sorry.
I agree. I appreciate that. Appreciate you for naming that.
If you're just joining us, this is Hemp C on the Peace and Social Justice Show, speaking with a protester, passionate protester at last week's Free Palestine protests in downtown Chico. This is the Peace and Social Justice Show on KZFR. Peace and Social Justice Show is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op, open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And by Chico Velo, supporting bicycling, education, and advocacy since 1980, Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycles and park it safely at their Bike Valet when available at the Thursday Night Market and Saturday Farmers Market. For more information, visit chicovelo.org and find them on Facebook. And again, if you're just joining us, this is Hemp C on the Peace and Social Justice Show, here with a sapient session I created in the middle of a protest. Apologies if it's harsh on the ears. I really wanted to bring you something live and direct, fresh, literally from the streets. And I hope you're able to capture some sapience from this session. I asked the protester, Little Palestine, about the three questions and a quote, and this is what they said.
One of the most basic quotes, and one quote that's been used, like, time after time, is Nelson Mandela, when he was like, we will never truly live in a free world. Like, this is not quote by quote, but, like, if you look it up in here. It's like, we will never truly live in a free world until, like, all apartheid regimes are gone, like, just as Palestine. Like, there are many people, from Angela Davis to Nelson Mandela, Malcolm X, and then other, obviously, influential activists and philosophers, amazing people who are changing the world, or who have changed the world in their own way, speaking about Palestine because they know it's a human right issue. It's a human cause issue. And honestly, I feel like, especially if you're a proud American, or as people like to call themselves, you would like to be a good citizen and give back to the world by being a good human being and kind of doing reparations in a way. Because they have ruined this country by first wiping out the indigenous people, bringing over slaves, having slavery happen, and they just keep funding things that will eliminate people of color. Where will this guilt, like, where will you do something to just replenish this guilt? I feel like I don't know. I don't want to be critical, sorry. I don't want to be too critical, But the thing is, this government, this country, the thing is, what is funding it all is the death of people of color. Mm. People of no color are just living guilt-free while there are blood on their hands.
This is Corey Hunt speaking with Lil Palestine at last week's Free Palestine protests. And I asked them, I told them about seeing a child as I was walking up asking their parents about what was going on there and if that gave them hope for the next generation having a better grasp on these issues than the current one.
Hopefully, if they're not sheltered, because some people choose to be sheltered. There are opportunities, especially in this country, of education and of resources where you can educate yourselves. But people choose to shelter themselves and their feelings and the people around them, choosing not to educate just because they don't want to deal with the consequences. And I'm going to wrap it up by saying one thing. A lot of people here are hypocritical because most people are very, let's say, against certain people being in this country and are always saying, I've been down the street, actually, in front of Jamba Juice years ago. I think 4 or 5 years ago, me and my cousin, she is visibly religious and wears a headscarf. And somebody told her, take it off. You are free in this country. And when she was trying to defend herself and trying to explain it is her choice to wear it, he was like, go back to your country. And so I think it's funny because as a Palestinian, we don't really have the choice to go back to our country. Mm. Most of us. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get banned from the country because of their resistance or acts of resistance.
Sure.
And if they do have the choice to go back, if you go to Palestine, if you see what the Palestinians go through, if you see the economy, if you see how everything is structured, it is structured for Palestinians to fail.
Mm.
So, at the end of the day, you're basically saying if you're not with this cause, you're a racist. Because if you really want Palestinians to go back to their country, stop funding their country.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, I hear you.
I almost lived by it.
So much gratitude to Little Palestine. If you're out there, as I'm listening back, you know, just so brave. They say public speaking is one of most humans' greatest fears. So brave to just come up and share as I'm just sticking this mic in their face, asking all these random questions. And they were able to present us with so many gems. As we close out the interview, here is their three questions.
My three questions are, are you on the right side of history?
Mm.
Are you on the right side of history? That's number one. As a human,
No, you're good.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
You're not useless. It's not your problem.
Don't
apologize.
As a human being, as an American, do you even feel a little bit of guilt knowing your tax dollars? Even me, as a Palestinian, like dual citizen, as a Palestinian, my money, my hardworking tax dollars go to my people's genocide. I know they're not your people, everyone, but like, how does it feel like your money goes to the genocide of indigenous people in another country? And the third one is, do you know anything about the creation of Israel? Israel is based on the creation of an ethnostate. An ethnostate is basically focused on one religion and race. Isn't that racist? And those are my three questions. Know your things. Educate yourselves. And I would recommend you read any literature that you can get on Palestine. I know recently Angela Davis wrote a book, Mark Lamont Hill wrote a book, but that's the only ones I know so far.
Those are great suggestions.
But just educate yourselves, and I would say listen to both sides, but you know which side is oppressed. So
always listen to the marginalized.
Yeah, exactly. And it was lovely. Hopefully somebody takes something from this. And as a Palestinian, your solidarity means so much. You guys have no idea, because most of our lives, especially the ones who are older than the state of Israel, have been told their existence is not justified. And that's thank you.
Well, let me, on behalf of all our listeners, know you acknowledge that you matter and you are.
I mean, thank you so much. Hearing that as a Palestinian, like I said, means the world. And as you, as a person in this country who's also going through everything, you matter just as well.
I appreciate you, little
Palestine.
We are
in solidarity more than you know.
Hey, many blessings. I'll let you get
to it. Many blessings. Thank you.
So many thanks again to Lil Palestine for the bravery and just the vulnerability in exposing us all to, you know, that life and what it's like to live in those circumstances. I hope people are able to gather it all through all the chaos of the passionate protesters. Thanks to everyone who came out and continues to come out to support this human rights issue. Coming up next, I'll be speaking with Marshawn Jones, a local coach, mentor. He's a gospel rapper. He does a little bit of it all, and he graced me with a little bit of his time as he was back east watching his son and taking his son to an all-star tournament that he qualified for. He made a little time for us to share his experiences as a black man. And this is all part of a celebratory episode I'm having for preparing us all, a preemptive, if you will, Juneteenth celebration. So you're all ready when it comes around June 19th. And yeah, this next Sapien session is myself and Marshawn Jones, and I hope you all gain sapience from it.
Thank you for your time, Marshawn. So you're a Chico resident. How long have you been living out here?
I've been in Chico for about 11 years.
Okay. And you came from down south over in Inglewood. And so what was that like? First, how did you find out about Chico?
Well, originally my wife moved out to Chico first. Okay. And then I came out to visit and I absolutely hated it. It was too quiet. Everybody was nice. You know, I ain't hear no gunshots, no sirens.
How old were you back then?
When I came to visit, I was 20 or 21, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, and then you hated it, but then you came anyway. How did that work?
Oh, just different mindset. You know, I was a different person mentally. Nothing changed about the city.
Mm-hmm.
It was just me, you know, realized that I needed to be in this type of environment because I was so comfortable in chaos. The sight of peace, made me uncomfortable.
That's intense, man. Yeah, I remember that reminds me of when I first came to Chico from LA. And I remember we didn't have no bars on the window. And I was actually scared then. I wasn't scared the whole time in LA. I'm running the streets with all the crazy madness. But I remember one of my first nights out here in Chico, and we didn't have no bars on the window. I was like, man, this doesn't feel safe at all. So it's interesting, those juxtapositions of perception or whatever. But so then you matured into the understanding of this being something that you wanted, or the environment that you wanted to be around, and you came out here. And so what was that experience like when you finally moved out here?
It was cool. You know, it definitely was a culture shock.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, like you said, you was tripping off. They didn't have bars. I remember I went with my pastor to the bank and I was like, yo, you can touch the tellers. Like, there's no glass.
Uh-huh,
like,
no bulletproof.
Yeah, and I was like, okay. I noticed that everything was, you know, close-knit everything. It's a small community, so I learned quickly that it's definitely about who you know. And this is a big, it's a big word of mouth town. Everything gets done from what I've seen in the past 10 years that I've been there. It's very heavy on the word of mouth, whether it's true or false.
Mm. I hear that. That's an interesting take on it. You want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. I've been here in the community for a while. So, I've heard things about myself, that, you know, aren't true. I've heard rumors about other people that I know not to be true. And I know it's just because when you're an outsider and people don't know who you are, they just jump to conclusions based off their experience with your type of people, whether you're Black, Mexican. When they see things, it's kind of like a relationship, you know. If you had somebody who mistreated you tell you that they love you, when the next person comes around and you hear that I love you, it triggers to how you were treated before. So you react in the same manner, you know, without even giving that person a chance to show you something different. So me being Black, me having braids, me looking the way that I look with all the tattoos that I have, people see me and they already have a preconception on how I am before even having a conversation with me.
Indeed. And for listeners, could you describe yourself about how tall are you? And
yeah, I'm 6'3", 320. I got two full sleeves tattoo on my neck, all that, braids, ear piercings, all that.
And that is Marshawn Jones, a local mentor, coach, and father. Here on KZFR, this is listener-supported KZFR Community Radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And this is the Peace and Social Justice Show and a segment that I call Sapient Sessions, where I'm sitting with, in this episode specifically, I'm sitting with some Black folks and just exposing you to the experiences, feelings, ideas, and understandings of what it is to be Black in Butte in particularly. And so as we jump back in, this is Marshawn Jones.
And so you grew up in Inglewood in the 90s, and that was a very tumultuous environment from my understanding. But there's also goodness, you know, there's also a lot of joy. I think that kind of gets lost up when people hear about these areas, the hood, so to speak. You know, all that really gets out of there is stories of victimhood and violence and tragedy. But would you like to speak to some of the community that you experienced while you were out there?
Oh, man, the community, it's great. Everybody loves everybody. I know for me personally, being around gangs, being heavily influenced by gangs, obviously you're going to gravitate that because those are the people who hold a lot of notoriety, a lot of power in the neighborhood. So you want to be a part of that. And everybody, you know, from family to friends, did everything they could to keep me from that because of what they saw in me, you know. And a lot of people don't understand, like they think, oh my gosh, these gangs are just, you know, going crazy. It's like, no, they know who's going somewhere and they don't. Like, it's kind of, that's like a sixth sense. It's like, man, you ain't doing nothing with your life. Just don't come get put on the hood, man. You know, but if you're not, we gonna make sure that we take care of you and look out for you, not wanting anything in return other than for you to be successful and put our city on the map and let other people know it ain't all bad over here.
Yeah, I think, that's a very interesting point that you mentioned as far as, you know, the other side of gangs. A lot of these kids are growing up without male mentors or adult figures in their life that care for them. And some of these so-called thugs are some of the most caring people that they'll have in their life for their existence, you know. And I think that goes without being understood because people just it's easy to just look at something from a distance and write it off like, oh, you know, that's terrible. I would never such and such a thing. But I think it's important for people to understand that pretty much anybody in the circumstances of people in urban areas would do the things that those people are doing. And I think that should be understood. So you were speaking of the community down south. How was that? How were you able to reestablish that when you came up to Chico, or were you able to?
Reestablish as far as how?
Like, you know, your community base, you know, do you have a group around you that you consider your community now, or a support group?
Absolutely. But it's on a different level. Okay. You know, back there, back in the city in Inglewood, the support group was more for protection. The support group that I have here in Chico is more about survival, more about accountability, more about it's like the best way to put it is like it's like a when you watch somebody grow, it's kind of like a child going to school. Like, look, okay, I did this part at home, now I need you to do this part at school. So the hood raised me and protected me and taught me how to live. And now, you know, being there in Chico, well, I'll say, yeah, the hood taught me how to survive. And now being in Chico, I'm learning how to live.
Yeah, I think that was perfectly, precisely put. Yeah, because when you're in those environments of poverty and everybody's, you know, dog-eat-dog, crab in a bucket,
yep,
then it's, you don't really have much room and space to thrive and think about thriving and think about down the line. And I remember as a child, it was just like 25 or 30, you know what I mean? That wasn't even a remote idea, you know what I mean? You're just thinking about day to day, trying to get back to the bed.
And yeah.
So now that you're out here in Chico, you say you're learning how to actually live. Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, coming from the hood, you know, life expectancy, you know, I had somebody, you know, because I was a little troublemaker when I was young, I had somebody tell me I wouldn't even survive to be 12. You know, then I made it past 12. Oh, you won't make it to see 15, you know, oh, you won't make it to see 18. And so me being 31, people don't understand. Like when I talk to them, like, man, I'm old. They're like, what? You 30? How old are you? And you think you old? You know, they don't understand where I come from, you know? And so I never thought about being 40 years old until I had children. Because now, okay, children make you think long-term when you don't, you know, when you don't have, you know, any type of, I say, real responsibility or somebody who really you're accounted for, it makes you move differently, you know? And, being here in Chico, there's no gangs. Well, I guess there is, but not to me coming from where I come
from. Yeah, it's different. Definitely different.
Yeah. You know, like even with Chapmantown, everybody was like, that's the first thing I heard when I came to Chico. You don't want to go to Chapmantown. And I'm like, man, the most dangerous thing about Chapmantown is they don't have sidewalks. Like, that's the most dangerous thing about Chapmantown, you know?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because Chapmantown gets a bum rap, man. I think it's, you know, I've been thinking about this recently, and I think that it was largely racist, you know, just because it was predominantly, that was the hub of minority, you know? You had a large Hmong population in there a few years back. I'm not sure if that's still the case now, but there was Mexicans and Blacks all through there. And I think just because they seen a bunch of non-whites in there, then it was just automatically, I mean, not to say that there wasn't, you know, poverty and crime and things like that, but it was nowhere near an actual, you know what I mean, ghetto. And
right,
it still isn't. And so, yeah, I'm glad you brought and named that. So it's June, or as this, you know, it's June today even, but as this show airs, it's Friday, June 4th. And I wanted to center this show around Juneteenth. And so I wanted to give you opportunity to speak to maybe what that means to you, if anything.
Well, I mean, so I think I'm glad that, you know, with everything that's happened in the past year or so, that a lot of people have been aware of what Juneteenth is. It actually shocked me of how many black people didn't know about Juneteenth. Like, I was like, what? You know, like, I was shocked. Like, somebody was like, oh, what? Did Michael Jordan play basketball? Like, you know, like, like, I'm like, you don't know what Juneteenth is and you're black? Like, that's crazy.
Man, that's one of that's one of those very, very important effects of black folks not being around their own. You know what I mean? And that's why I find it really important for black folks to be able to find spaces with other black folks to be able to pick up, you know, that culture and that history and so forth. But I didn't mean to cut you off. What were you saying?
No, you good. No, it's just for me, it's just, it's a celebration, you know, it's a chance to really embrace the culture, you know, be around like-minded people. Of course, we all know the history of it. We didn't know what day we were actually free, so we just called it Juneteenth. We know all of that. But for me, being, you know, in the time that it is now, it's 100% about celebration. It's 100% about educating other people. And it's another day that we get to honor us and, you know, really showcase. You know, I've been in a lot of events over the past 7-8 years with Juneteenth, and just to showcase our talents, our abilities, no matter what it is, it's a beautiful thing. And I would like to see more white people educated on what Juneteenth is and really be a part of not necessarily the celebration part, but the culture and understanding of it, because it's, you know, it's like I heard a rapper say, you know, he had a conversation with this rich white guy who didn't understand his mentality. So he sat down and had him watch Menace to Society, you know, and then the white guy had him watch another movie. I forgot what it was, but it was just basically them bringing each other into each other's worlds to understand, you know, why they move, how they move, and why they think, how they think. And I think Juneteenth would be a great place for white people to come and understand, you know, who we are.
Mm. Such a diverse people as well. You know, people get these ideas from stereotypes. Like you say, Menace to Society, that movie hits on several notes for me. I was actually raised literally right around the corner from where that drive-by at the end of the movie is over there on 8th and Jefferson in South Central. So that movie was like, it was literally just showing our neighborhood. And back then in the 80s, it was really like that. But like I was saying earlier, you know, it doesn't get enough, you know, they made a bunch of movies about the crime and everything, but it doesn't get enough light and shine the community, you know what I mean? The Juneteenth celebrations that we had in LA, you know what I mean? With a bunch of black folks and just the celebrations in general, man, every weekend, you know, somebody having a cookout and a barbecue, and it's all kinds of love being shared there. And I just wish that there were more opportunities and pieces of work for non-black folks to see us in those lights as well. And so, yeah, that's what I love about Juneteenth, is just our ability to come together and say, yeah, this is who we are, and celebrate it with each other, and then allow others to be able to see, look into that. What does being black mean to you?
Being black? Whew, man, what it means to me? It means, to me, first of all, it means royalty. Mm. It means empowerment. And also from other people's perspective, I know that it means threatening.
Mm.
I know that it means uncertainty. Even with people not knowing me, I pass the eye test of what a typical thug looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but anybody who knows me, you have a simple conversation with me, you'd be like, there's no way. You know, so I know with the being black, I'm well aware that I'm royalty, and that the adversary is really looking for an opportunity to take me out, and I got to do my best not to give them one.
Mm. It is hard being black in America and dangerous.
Yes, it is.
But it's also amazing and beautiful and powerful. If you're just joining us, that's Marshawn Jones, a local coach, mentor, and gospel rapper here on the Peace and Social Justice Show. The Peace and Social Justice Show on KZFR is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the regional and continuing education at Chico State, offering online graduate test preparation courses for those seeking an advanced degree in a wide range of fields, including law and business. Sign up for a complimentary strategy session to help you prepare to take GRE, GMAT, and LSAT at rce.csuchico.edu. And by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, family-owned, operated, and argued over since 1980, reminding listeners to think for themselves but drink with others. As we join back in the conversation, I'm asking Marshawn, what is one of the main difficulties living in a predominantly non-black culture? And this was his answer.
Food. Definitely not. Chico got some good food, but they ain't got no soul food, you know?
No, it's lacking for sure.
Yeah, so it's hard.
Just culture in general out here, man. It's tough to find.
It is. And but we just got a beauty shop. You know, that was one. Not too many black barbers. Yeah, so we don't have dreads, that.
Boy. You know?
Yeah, for real. And it's not too many, like, it's not a spot we can kick it to where I can be like, oh, yeah, I can go run into Unk at the barbershop. You know, he might be getting lined up, you know, getting his dreads retwisted. Like, there's no safe place. There's no hub for us to really go and meet and know that, man, I'm going to run into my people if I just pull up at this spot.
Mm.
You know? But to answer the question about black privilege, one thing about being black, we going to look good forever. You take care of yourself. That's one for
that
sure.
That melanin.
Yes. And also, I like to look at the bad as also good. So that same thing that white people fear in us, that fear that they have when they see us, should also empower us to understand that you're not afraid of nobody that you think you can dominate. When you are fearful of something or someone, like when you was in school, the bully was always bigger than you.
Mm.
And if the bully wasn't bigger than you, then he had mind control over you. And I think that when it comes to black people feeling less than when it comes to white people, it's because of a mental dominance that they've allowed to set in.
Mm.
You know, and being black, you got to understand that they already afraid of us. That's why they try to keep so much information from us, because they know. You know, it's like your kids. If they know where you stash your candy at, they going in that stash. But if you know if you can keep them guessing and keep them frustrated and not know where that candy stash is, man, they gonna continuously be disappointed because you got something that they want and they can't find it.
That's deep.
So yeah, so We can keep it simple and say athleticism. You know, we all seen white man can't jump. you know, we are very innovative. We are very creative. There's so much black privilege that we have. But just the sad thing about it is that a lot of us lack execution.
Mm. Or understanding, yeah.
I just posted something today on my Instagram, and this guy was just basically talking about people get ideas and they run with it and they run to tell everybody, and now they've invited all these people to discourage them from accomplishing their goals instead of telling, you know, a few like-minded people, like, hey, this is what I'm working on. so that they can be encouraged to be like, cool, let's get it. Let's do what you got to do to make sure it comes to pass, and then share the results with everybody else.
Yeah, that reminds me of a quote, more achievements than announcements.
Yes.
Right? So, yeah, I resonate with that heavily. And so since we spoke on Black privilege, just to make everyone comfortable to recognize that, you know, it's not just a white thing. I'd like to give you an opportunity to speak on what you consider to be white privilege.
Oh,
because a lot of people, they're like, oh, man, I grew up poor, man. I'm still waiting for my white privilege card and things like that. People feel like because they've struggled, then they don't have white privilege. So would you like to speak to that at all?
Yes. I mean, I was going to say, first of all, hopefully this don't go over some of the listeners' head, but white privilege is living in general.
Mm.
having the ability to wake up every day and know that your life is not in danger because of your skin color.
Mm. Well put. Very concise.
You know, that's a privilege within itself. Y'all have the privilege of being able to say what you want freely to the police. You have the ability to lash out in public places, and you also have the word that I'm looking for. You have the it's on the tip of my tongue. People will give you,
benefit of the doubt?
Yes, it's the benefit of the doubt. You will always get the benefit of the doubt no matter what the situation is. People want to know more about why. You know, whatever the scenario is, they want to know why.
I hear you. Yeah, yeah. Well, what's going on?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes, they want to know the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like you said earlier about being in the Black community, they only want to know. I mean, they only highlight the negative stuff. Well, you don't know. Well, my man's was selling drugs because he had a felony for some stuff that he did when he was young and dumb. Mm-hmm. But now this is the only way he can provide for his family.
He's taking care of several people. Yeah, exactly. And these are poverty-based decisions, not some type of biological decision or whatever. And that's the part that makes it difficult for me to communicate with some folks on a topic, because they don't realize what they're saying. You know what I mean? Yep. You got two choices when you're dealing with, you know what I mean, your perception of poverty crime, what a lot of people call black-on-black crime or whatever, what I call what it actually is poverty-based crime. And yes. You have two perceptions or two choices of perception you could have on it. You could either say that these people are committing these crimes because they have been abused by certain policies, or they're committing these crimes because of biological disposition. And so if you say that this crime is caused by biological disposition because these people are Black, that's racist. That's just inherently racist. And so the only way to not be racist is to acknowledge and understand that it's not the biology of these people, but the circumstances and policies that they live under. A phenomenal conversation. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, and if you're not giving them an answer, or you're not giving them a way out, then your opinion really, you know, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And it's just a form of abuse in that point. Yeah, if you're not actually being constructive, And you're just criticizing for your own sake. Yeah, that's basically abuse, in my opinion.
Yep.
A phenomenal conversation, man. I hope our listeners gained something from this. I thank you for your vulnerability and honesty. And this being Sapient Sessions on Peace and Social Justice Show, KZFR, at the end of each segment, I like to ask my guests and give them an opportunity to ask listeners to ask themselves three questions that you might find will be beneficial for them, and share with them your favorite quote.
I would ask them, what is their why? And to expound on that is, whatever it is that you're doing, what is your reasoning behind it? Sometimes we get discouraged when we have goals, and always make sure that your why is bigger than you. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I'm my drive. You need something else. It doesn't have to be someone, but you need something that's bigger than you, that when you're not enough and you don't feel like you want to push, there's something bigger than you that say, I got to keep going.
Mm.
Another question I would ask him is who's in your circle? Check your surroundings. Make sure that everybody around you is bringing something to the team, whether it's somebody who helps you mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally. Make sure you don't have any leeches around you. Mm. Another question I would have them to ask is just who is it that you trust, and why do you trust that person? Because a lot of times, you know, I just saw a quote recently. It just says, sometimes the people you look out for are the people you got to look out for.
Mm.
You know, so reevaluate the people in your life and see why they are there. If they continue to serve a purpose. And I know a lot of, when you say serve a purpose, people feel like, oh, you using them, or no, it's not about using. It's about iron sharpening iron. It's about being around like-minded people who are either where you want to be or are heading in that same direction of what you want to do.
Great points. Yeah, man. Because I think it's important, because it's a thin line, you know, thin line between, you know, being like capitalistic with your friendships and being like, you know, I want people to give me stuff. And then that honest need of reciprocation, you know what I mean? We all need reciprocation. If it's a one way street, then it's just unsustainable. So I thank you for that point. And you have a quote for us? Oh, go ahead.
Yes. And the quote is just the most vague scripture everybody's heard, Philippians 4:13, which means I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I know a lot of people like to use that scripture as encouragement, to do, you know, to pass tests, to get jobs and all that stuff. But I like to use it as, an encouragement to stop bad habits, you know, to continue to grow is something, you know, we all have things that we need to work on. And so I use that scripture as something to say, okay, hey, I have enough strength to do this. God has given me the ability to stop or to get rid of whatever the thing may be. And so that's something that has always stuck with me. Just as I have the ability to make a bad decision, I have the ability to make a good one as well.
Brilliant. Beautiful, and appreciate it, my brother. Thank you for your time. And wish you nothing but success and health, my brother.
Yes, sir. It's all love. I appreciate you.
Thanks again to Marshawn Jones for his time, honesty, and insight to what it is to be, you know, the big black man, you know, that is the prototype of fear in America, and all the struggles that come with living that life and just trying to find your way in society when you're looked at with all of these prejudices. Such a great conversation. I can't thank him enough for his time. And next, a quick stop off at Bethel AME, where I spoke with Rachel Cowan about a Juneteenth, a few Juneteenth events coming up later this month, the 18th, 19th, and the 20th, I believe. And without further ado, here is that conversation with Rachel Cowan here from Black in Butte. And you were explaining to me what that was. If you could share that with listeners, what exactly is that?
So Black in Butte is a private group where people of color can share their experience, specifically here in Butte County. But we also have people outside of the county within the group.
Mm-hmm. And you were speaking to kind of what inspired you to create that?
I believe it was Father's Day, and it was shortly after the senseless murder of George Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
And I was feeling disconnected. Definitely, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
And just wanted to create a space where we connect and share, and without, I guess, onlookers.
Yeah, that's very important, yeah.
And so just creating a safe black space for people of color to just share as we move forward and work toward actual racial equity.
Mm. Yeah, I appreciate you for taking that initiative. Such, you know, these things in our heads as individuals, we come up with these ideas and sometimes we don't present them to the world. And we all lose when we don't. So you taking that out of your heart and out of your mind and spirit and putting that into reality has been a benefit for so many of us. So I thank you for doing that. And as I was scrolling through the Facebook group of Black and Butte, I noticed there is a Juneteenth celebration this year that you guys are doing. And I wanted to give listeners an opportunity to hear about what's going on with that.
Yes, yeah, so we're very excited. My team and I, on Friday the 18th, it's going to be a drive-in. We've partnered with Merriam Park. They're going to be playing Black Panther.
And that's here in Chico?
Yes.
Okay.
So the gates open at 7:30. Tickets are $20 per vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday, we're going to gather at Bethel AME Church.
Okay.
For just really a community celebration. There'll be vendors.
Awesome.
The event is catered, so there'll be delicious food. There'll be a bounce house for the kids, games, dominoes.
Uh-oh.
You know, you say it's going to be there.
Uh-oh. Yeah, it sounds like good times going down. And that's the actual date of Juneteenth.
Yes,
on Saturday.
That's Saturday from 11 to 3 p.m.
And I saw there might have been one more event.
Yes. And so we're going to close out the 3-day weekend
mm-hmm.
At Bethel AME Church. They're going to have a celebration service.
Oh.
And there should be absolutely great music, word, some refreshments after. Just a time to close out the weekend and launch into what's next.
Awesome. And what time is the service?
The service is at 11 a.m.
Okay. That sounds like a fun, joy-packed weekend.
Yeah. And the address
for
is 821 Linden Street for,
and that's for Bethel?
Saturday, yes, and Sunday.
Okay. And so I guess we got a little bit ahead of ourselves, or I took us a little bit ahead of ourselves. And I guess we should explain what this whole celebration is about.
Yeah.
So Juneteenth is the event. What is that for you?
For me, Juneteenth is really a public celebration of freedom.
Mm.
I look at it like baptism,
mm.
you know, standing and proclaiming, going from slavery to freedom.
Mm.
And then it's also that continued work of fulfilling the freedom
mm.
That we haven't yet acquired.
Thanks so much to Rachel Marie for sharing that information with us and experience. I hope you all are able to make it out Friday the 18th to the drive-in at the park, Merriam Park, or the events at the church on Saturday at 11 or Sunday at 11, the service at 11. I asked Rachel about the three questions and a quote, and this was her answer.
Three questions I ask myself. I ask myself, is it kind?
Mm.
I ask myself what the motivation is. The idea behind that is trying to remove ulterior motives.
Mm.
And so definitely self-reflecting on what's the motive of XYZ. And then I guess who's the beneficiary
mm.
When it comes to something I'm doing, thinking, wanting. Do I benefit? Do we benefit? Yeah. Yes. Those would be three questions I ask myself.
Great questions. And do you have a quote for us?
Yes. Okay. This quote comes from Gwendolyn Brooks. We are each other's harvest. We are each other's business. We are each other's magnitude and bond. End quote.
And what does that mean to you?
For me, it's looking out versus looking in.
Mm.
So often we can get caught up in our thoughts, our feelings, our goals, our ways, and that we need to be concerned about how everything we do is connected to everything else. And we're responsible for that.
Yeah, there's a Native American saying, all my relations, that encompasses that same thing. And I think that's a great point that you bring. I thank you for your time, Rachel.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you all for putting this event together. And I look forward to in partaking.
Awesome. We'll be glad to have you.
The sun is back, Butte County is opening up, and everybody's getting ready to go outside and start commencing. Are you? If your business or organization would like to reach the thousands of loyal KCFR listeners about your goods and services and upcoming events, contact me, Ray Lager, Underwriting Director here at KCFR. As we emerge from the funk of 2020, many businesses are preparing for an uptick. And to ensure your message is heard, contact me today by phone or text at 530-520-4742 or at underwrite@kzfr.org. Space is limited, so don't delay. For phone or text, 530-520-4742 or by email at underwrite@kzfr.org. Let's get outside, have some fun, and let's get busy.
And thanks again to Rachel and everyone who put together this Juneteenth event. It sounds like it's going to be amazing. And lastly, and certainly not least, the final Sapient session of this week's Peace and Social Justice Show. I sat in the park and had an interesting conversation with Anicia Johnson from Alma Culture Education and Art Center. Without further ado, here is that session. You know, I have a terrible memory, so I'm not sure exactly where we first met, but my most prominent memory is when you invited me to be a part of the Africa family coming to Chico with Alma Culture. And so I wanted to give our listeners the opportunity to get informed about what Alma Culture in Chico is.
Sure. Well, I am the founder of Alma Culture, Education, Sciences, and Arts, established in Chico, California in 2017. And Alma Culture seeks to be a resource for educators, the community, and outreach to youth regarding the history of the African American and the African diaspora.
And that is a critical component for all of us, not just black peoples. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to speak to what that means, African diaspora.
Again, the African diaspora is the places in the world where, particularly through the more recent, what's termed Atlantic slave trade. However, we do know that Africans, ancient Africans, traveled the globe and civilized almost every continent on the globe. So the African diaspora can really be considered the entire planet. Yes, we're indigenous everywhere, I like to say.
Yeah, that clicks on a lot of lights all around the head, but I'll try to stay focused here.
For sure.
I guess my next question is how you became aware. I'll start with, when did you become aware of your race?
That is such an intriguing question, even. So I was born in Chico, California in 1961 and have lived here my entire life. In fact, my siblings and I all went preschool through university in our hometown with degrees. But back to the question of when I became aware of race, I would say probably once I got to public school. Because, you know, in your home, often you're just with the people that you know. Your culture is your family, your neighbors who may or not be the same race as you, the people that you your parents socialize with. And for us, there was a lot of involvement in a local church. So I would say probably Elementary school is when I became aware.
And was there like a particular event that sticks out for you, or is that just like a time period where you kind of just felt like you were getting more immersed in outside?
Well, definitely with curriculum being introduced to the mind, I'm aware that images were being presented to me very young about what it meant to be a black person, or eventually when I was younger and still in school, we were Afro-American. We weren't African-American yet.
Okay.
So there, I began to have images introduced to me in the schools, mostly, I would say, which impressed on me what it meant to be black. I have a joke that I tell one good friend of mine, an elder. I tell him, I say, Brother Bob, I didn't know that I was black most of my life, even up until recently. And when I say that, it's not that I didn't appreciate my dark, rich hue and my people and my culture. I didn't know being black was a thing to other people. And I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
it's intriguing. If you could elaborate, maybe.
Well, for example, being a significant minority in a predominantly non-black community, I noticed that people had reactions to me and still have reactions to me based on however they perceive what I look like.
Mm-hmm.
And so black can be a thing for people. It can be something to be, again, intrigued by or to feel threatened by, to feel even encouraged by. People have different perceptions of a person based on their race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I even want to add fetishize. You know, I think that's one that kind of blends those things that is kind of overlooked sometimes, and then it becomes pernicious, you know, a little dangerous when we start thinking that we're appreciating something. But it, you know, it's kind of like the difference between love and lust, you know, where, you know, you could like black people in a certain way that might not necessarily be healthy. Like when you come walking up like, oh, let me touch that, or you look good for a black person, or this and that, all these little different things.
Yeah, but you know, that's really interesting. I have never been approached with "you look good for a." Well, I do get it now because I'm advancing in years. I won't say I'm aging, but I do get, "Well, you look really good for your age."
Uh-huh.
I like that one.
Sure.
But as far as the race one, I don't think I've ever been approached that way.
I think it's usually the darker tones, you know, which you actually have a slightly darker tone.
Yes, I do. I'm proud of it.
Indeed. But yeah, I find I've heard some darker folks explain that.
We say highly melanated.
Yes. I mean, I find darker to be a beautiful thing. Darker
for sure.
Berry, sweet as a juice. But, yeah, so I think that's something that it's important for people to understand and kind of really investigate their appreciation to where, you know, it's not problematic.
Good points.
Interesting. So growing up in Chico and going to school was your revelation of race. And was that, did that coincide with your revelation of racism?
No. I really have not, I really didn't grasp a working concept or definition for myself of racism until my recent adult years, to be quite honest. Yes, that's very surprising to people, especially, here, let me give you a scenario that might help me further describe my experience. Like I said, my siblings and I, my three other siblings and I, we do have another sibling, but he wasn't raised in our home. But the four of us that were grew up here in Chico went preschool through university in our hometown with degrees. Now, I think I've always been aware of a little like angst on my part, a little tension. I didn't know that I had been immersed in situations where there might be attitudes of racism or ignorance, for example, in classrooms. Mm-hmm. So I learned to be to live with discomfort. But in 1987, I graduated from the university with a degree in international business. In the College of Business, there were 500 graduates that year, three of whom were black. Mm. One was a female. So someone asked me recently if I was aware of institutional racism at that time, or really even social racism. I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what it was.
Sure.
So again, going through this situation, which is very obviously very unique, if I'm one, you know, one black female of, out of three blacks out of the college graduating class, which mm-hmm. had 500, it was very unique.
Yes, very much so. Congratulations on that as well. And
Thank you.
Speaks to the non-monolithic experience of being an African-American. And I think that's something that's also very important to touch on, because we get these internalized racially prejudiced ideas that, you know, to be black is to be is, there you go, to be a certain way, to be black is to speak with a certain form of Ebonics, or to dress a certain way, or like a certain type of music. And that's just racist in itself. You know, we're all very different individuals. Would you like to speak to that?
Sure. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. Over the years, people have asked me where I was from when they would meet me. Mm. And apparently I have a very professional air to some people. And,
sure.
And or people would think maybe I was a university professor.
Mm-hmm.
And but really, a lot of people have been really surprised that I grew up in Chico. Mm. And I just say, well, they grow us here, too.
Indeed, they do, to an extent, I guess. Huh? And so that brings us around to. So you learned about race in middle school, but
elementary,
and you didn't really grasp a concept of racism until much later in life, which illustrates the lack of education in the school system, especially at that time. It's taken minor steps since then, but how were you encouraged to start educating about the African diaspora?
Well, you know, I want to talk about, and you'll have to ask me again because I might forget the question because
sure.
I'm segueing, the definition of racism.
Thank you.
I think most people don't have a concept of it, really, in my idea of a good working definition of racism. Mm. And I think that the words used way too much and thrown around way too much at people who may just be uneducated or ignorant. And I don't want to say ignorant like in to slight anyone, but not having been exposed.
Yes.
Or had experience. And lack of knowledge.
Yes.
Doesn't make a person racist. Even if someone's hateful towards me because of their lack of appreciation of my, quote, skin color, I wouldn't call them a racist. So racist has nothing to do with being racist has nothing to do with whether you like me or not. Racism has to do with whether you can prevent me from, on some level, gaining the knowledge, experience, and having economic opportunities to pursue my peace and happiness in this society. Most people don't have that power over me.
Mm. And this is one that I have been all over the place with. I hear different scholars come with different perceptions on this term. And so I'm one of working definitions. So like if we're talking about something, then we kind of can come to an agreement. If we're having a reasonable discussion, obviously, if we're coming from two unreasonable places, then that's a total different thing. But what I'm seeing in these definitions is some are saying that systemic racism is actual racism, and racial prejudice isn't actual racism. Is that kind of what you're saying?
It sounds like very similar to what I'm saying. I think somebody that has racial prejudice, who is in authoritative position,
sure,
can be racist in his actions, mm, because it has more to do with actions, again, preventing, mm-hmm, you know, preventing us all from having
prosperity
and just peace.
Yeah.
Simple.
So that kind of, yeah, that kind of threw me off there, because that is such a can of worms, for lack of a better term. It goes so many places, and I think that's very important, is people getting a deeper understanding, because I feel like the definition that you're describing is what I would consider, from my, you know, novice, whatever perspective, to be the deepest understanding of the term. And then it kind of goes and can shallow all the way down to where you're just like the racial prejudice definition of, you know, when you think someone of a certain race is inferior or superior, you know, that's the more the shallowest of the definition.
Right.
But I could see value in them both.
And, you know, that brings me back to the work of Alma Culture. Our goal is to instill pride in, as well as respect for, the African diaspora. Mm-hmm. And based on how most of us have been miseducated, mm-hmm, and or indoctrinated about, mm-hmm, Black folks in general and the African continent specifically, there's a lot of correct history that can be shared to dispel myths and stereotypes.
Sure.
And so that's the uplifting part of what we're doing, is providing more correct history and giving people examples of the greatness of ancient Africa up until present, with visuals and descriptions of lesser known people that, for me, has just later in life, I'm learning, and is just so encouraging,
sure,
and inspiring. If African American children and all children are given this information early, then it sets the tone for them understanding their role. It's been said that students have to gain an understanding of their relationship to others on the timeline of humanity to know where they are today and what their purpose can be, no matter what field of or occupation they decide to go in, mm-hmm, into, just having that appreciation for their great African heritage. That's our goal. And for all others to understand that too, to understand that everything that we're enjoying in the West, it comes out of Africa, the most mineral rich and resource rich continent on the planet, as well as the source of knowledge for thousands of years. So often we get a much different picture, and I would say that is by design.
Yes. That's Anicia Johnson from Alma Culture's Arts and Education Center speaking about the African diaspora. And this is the Peace and Social Justice Show. Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and cultural newsletter. To stay in the know or have your events listed, visit friendsof.art. And by Tires Plus, complete auto repair offering Michelin and Cooper tires, oil changes, air conditioning service, repairs, and maintenance. They also install custom suspension, lift and lower kits, winches, custom bumpers, and trailer brakes on the corner of 6th Street and Broadway in Chico. Open from 8:30 to 5 Monday through Saturday, and on Facebook and at 342-8338.
Our intention with it's called the African American and African Diaspora History Library Project. I know that's a mouthful, but our intention is to create visuals and make aware through these visuals, the images of various significant people from ancient Africa to present and their contributions to civilizations and humanity, to make those available to all public schools. We have had erected three prototypes at three local schools, and we'll be working to create the revised version this summer and install them by fall. So as many schools as want that project. And there is information on our website, which is AMMAculture.org. AMMAculture.org, if you want to know more.
I highly suggest everyone check that out. I thank Anicia so much for her time. And as I always in these sessions, I asked her for three questions and a quote. And this was what she said.
Okay, so what have you been putting off doing for yourself?
Great question.
That you would like to make a commitment to, recommit yourself to. Mm-hmm. Are the five people that are closest to you in your life bringing you up? If not,
wow,
you might want to check, you know, the five closest people to you in your life. Very important.
Wow, that's a great observation.
Let's see. What steps are you taking? I guess this is similar to the first one, but what steps are you taking to get closer or to live out that purpose that you've been, that's been placed in your heart that maybe only you know about? Proverbs.
Beautiful questions. And a favorite proverb or quote.
So for years,
like
I've heard it takes a village to raise a child. And so I've coined a new proverb phrase. It's it takes a village to do anything worthwhile for the community.
Thank you so much,
Ashe.
Anicia. This has been a pleasure and enlightening and educating. And I hope our listeners enjoyed as much as I did.
Just delightful, Corey. Thank you.
Thank you, Anicia. And thank you to all my guests, Little Palestine, Marshawn Jones, and Rachel Cowan, for your time, energy, and vulnerability. Thank you all for tuning in. That concludes another episode of the Peace and Social Justice Show. As always, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I'm MC Soapbox Corey, signing out. Stay tuned for Playing Dead.
Listeners, it's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Megan Hammer. Secret Trail Brewing Company in Chico hosts Trivia Night every Tuesday starting June 8th. It will be on the back patio, hosted by Cameron Ford and Dylan Collins. Come for sign-ups at 5:30 p.m. at the Secret Trail Brewing Company, located on 132 Myers Street, Suite 120 in Chico. The Paradise Ridge Chamber of Commerce is proud to bring back the Ridge's most loved summer event. Party in the Park Music and Marketplace is a seasonal tradition of local pride and community vitality in the historic heart of Paradise. With its farmers market, kids zone, talented bands and performers, arts, crafts, and local organizations, this event offers abundant opportunity to celebrate community. Food and drinks will be available for purchase. Local vendors, crafters, and merchants are encouraged to sign up for booths by visiting the Paradise Chamber website. This event will be held every Wednesday evening, starting from June 16th until August 4th, from 5:30 until 8 p.m., and will be located in the Paradise Community Park on 5570 Black Olive Drive at Pearson Road, Paradise. If you have an event you'd like on the community calendar, let me know by sending us an email at cc@kzfr.org. This is the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar.
All right. Thank you, Megan. It is just exactly. Yes, it is. Well, close enough. 1 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in. KZFR, listener-supported community radio. worldwide at KZFR.org. It's time for Playing Dead, Music of the Grateful Dead, every Friday afternoon. We're going back 52 years to a couple of smoking shows, in one in Portland and one in Eugene on May 30th and 31st, 1969. So I'm going to start with the 31st, and then we're going to drop into a barnstorming Grateful Dead. I think you're going to dig it. It's pretty fun stuff. Let's thank some underwriters. We'll get right into it. We're going to start with the 31st, and then we'll which is the Eugene show, and then we're going to drive over to the 30th from Springer's Inn in Portland, Oregon. I wonder if it's still there. Who knows? Maybe somebody knows. Somebody will tell me. All righty, we want to thank Affordable Automotive, repairing and maintaining all makes of cars, trucks, and SUVs since 1996. Affordable Automotive has pickup and delivery service and financing at 2106 Park Avenue in Chico. Appointments at 892-1774 and chicoautomotive.com. They're also looking for new technicians to join their team. You can reach Mike Button at 892-1774 for details. And by Quicksilver Courier Service. Established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier has the flexibility to provide a broad range of services for individuals as well as legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit chicocourier.com for quality 24/7 service. All righty, let's get right to it. If you're a, if you like the oddities of Live Dead stuff, you might want to look up this show. If you go to relisten.net, you'll find a plethora of Grateful Dead performances as well as a number of other artists, like tons of them, and a variety of formats and shows to choose from. So check it out. And if you do stagger over and you're looking for something special, go to the 531-69, today's show, and you'll see song number 3, it says Yellow Dog Story. Well, it's about a 10.5 minutes of downtime and chatter. And Ken Babbs, the original prankster extraordinaire, is just going off the whole time. Sounds like you're at one of the acid tests, and